We've got a break from the heat, and some rains are falling in the middle of the Corn Belt this morning. That's got the corn market on the defensive. We'll get an update on the weather, an update on the used machinery market, have a conversation with a food activist, and hear about the virtual show ring.
Live from the launch pad of another uncertain 2020 week from Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Greg Peterson, that's our pal Machinery Pete. Then we'll chat with Danielle Nirenberg, Julia Child Award-winning researcher. And in the final segment, we've got ag teacher Shirley Kaufman from Buffalo Gap High School. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX issues a weather report. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, at long last, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Thank you, Davis. Appreciate that. It is good
Absolutely.
To be back.
Absolutely.
Good to be back. It was fun to be away, but it is good to be back.
Yes. Uh-huh. Do you remember how to do radio?
Well, we'll find out together here over the next hour, won't we?
It's fairly simple. You just keep talking, basically.
Okay.
You know, and if it gets quiet, you know, start talking again. That's the basics. Those are the basics.
And never let a dull moment survive. Just get rid of that. You know, I loved your intro. Uh-huh. I loved your intro. Yeah. The only thing with certainty is that each and every week starts with uncertainty right now.
That's right. That's right. I'm certainly excited to try and awkwardly move in my Julia Child's impression. We've got an award-winning researcher.
Well, I'm glad that we're getting it out of the way now.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it now before we've got Danielle on.
That's right. But that was okay. Mm-hmm. I would have guessed Julia Child on that.
You would, okay. So
yes.
At least moderately accurate. Thank you for that.
Well, only because I've heard enough bad ones over the years to know that was it.
You're going to want to baste frequently.
Oh, no. The conversation with Danny will be interesting. There's no question about it. She's it's something that she brings a lot of passion to. And I've got some basic questions that I want to ask her about what is Food Tank? What is a food activist? Mm-hmm. What is the goal? What's the mission? What are you trying to accomplish? Stuff like that. So, and then of course we will get into what the award means to her as well.
Very good.
All right, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, just quickly on the weather here, because we've got Michael Clark coming up. Rains fell in parts of the Midwest over the weekend, but persistent heat and dryness was enough to offset the showers due to evaporation. Far southern states of the Midwest, including north central and northeast Illinois, central Kansas, and southeastern Missouri, all got a drink, but totals in most areas were too small to make a significant impact. While rains are expected from northern Kansas to southern Illinois, and cooler temperatures are forecast by some, traders and farmers alike will be watching the weather closely this week, Chip.
Yeah, we'll get an update from Michael here in just a couple of minutes.
Well, on Saturday, the number of COVID-19 infections surged in the U.S. and around the world. The U.S. fatality count now stands at just over 140,000 victims. Chip, New York City is advancing its phased-in approach to reopening the city. Meanwhile, the mayor of Los Angeles warned that his city is on the brink of another stay-at-home order.
Yeah.
With public schools due to restart classes this fall, debate rages across the country on how to best protect and serve the student body and their families. I just got an email today about that. I don't think in my town they still know what they're going to do.
Right. Well, that's COVID-19 is the ultimate source of uncertainty as we look forward each and every week. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to figure out exactly what it means to the states that went through the restart, had the surge of confirmed cases. What are they going to do to try to rein it in? Boy, I tell you, everybody is learning new normals, I guess. Mm-hmm. I hate that term, but everybody is starting to understand and how to work with a new set of reality. And it's an interesting effort out there right now.
Well, interestingly, on Sunday, President Trump was quoted as calling the nation's top disease expert Anthony Fauci, quote, a bit of an alarmist when it comes to COVID-19. Trump later noted he has a good relationship with Fauci and the administration has denied suggestions the White House is running a campaign against him. Congress will return to work today with both houses set to discuss a number of key legislative priorities, including defense authorization and appropriations packages. Senate Republicans are expected to release their promised plan for additional stimulus spending, which will likely be mired in debate as House Democrats have a plan with a much higher price tag. There's about a $2 billion gap between those plans.
No, it's a $2 trillion gap.
Oh, with a T.
With a TR. Yes, with a TR on it. Yeah, it's a $2 trillion gap on it. And there are some in the Senate, in other words, Republicans in the Senate, that are saying, listen, let's use up what we've allocated first before we go and issue some additional funding. But there's another package coming.
Well, despite efforts by the Trump administration to wean citizens off the SNAP program, during the pandemic, more than 6 million people joined the program. That marks a significant surge in applications and recipients. And quickly here, the Malaysian palm oil industry is dealing with a labor shortage that has cost the country around 25% of its palm oil yield. The Malaysian government has decided to freeze recruiting foreign workers until December. Workers from Indonesia and Bangladesh have historically made up around 84% of the palm oil industry's workforce, but those workers have not arrived amid COVID concerns. And I wonder if that's not going to lever for a little bit of soy oil demand.
Yeah.
Coming
yeah.
up here, it's, which would be great.
Certainly, it certainly could or should or yes, I think it will. You know, and on the SNAP program sign up, when we've got the unemployment going, it's 6 million people. When I saw that number, it surprised me that it was that low. You know, it wouldn't have surprised me to see 26 million, not 6 million. Yep. So, all right, let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. How you doing, Michael?
Good, Chip. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, just fine. Hey, little more active weather pattern here over the next 48, huh?
Yeah, yeah, it is, especially across, like, Missouri and southeastern Nebraska. And Missouri really needs some rain. There's some guys we've talked to who just, they could really use it. And in the next 2.5 days, there's going to be a really good shot at it as an active pattern is certainly on tap.
Okay. It doesn't sound like that's going to stick around for very long, though, is it? I mean, we get the heat back by the end of the week?
Yeah, it gets warmer at the end of the week, and the pattern will relax a little bit as we get into the weekend and early next week. Now, we're still going to have the potential of those thunderstorm clusters and things of that nature, the convective rains. In fact, I do think there's a legitimate shot for some of the driest areas in Iowa to look at the risk at a couple of these thunderstorm clusters. It's not, we're not taking it to the bank yet, but we do have it in our 3 to 7 day outlook this morning. I think they can get some rain here later this week. So that's good at least.
Yeah. Yeah. That opportunity right there sounds really good. No doubt. Take me to the last, take me to the first week of August. Are you seeing any threats there?
Well, I tell you, we have a pretty good indication of a bigger cold front to end the month of July and start August that could be active as well. So we'll watch it.
Excellent. Excellent. Michael, thank you so much. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. That is Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Okay. When we come back, it's Monday morning. You know what that means. We get to have a conversation with Machinery Pete, get all the latest details on what's happening in the used machinery market next. Here on AgriTalk. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
I'm Andrew McCrae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit PivotBio.com to find a representative near you.
I'm All right. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Remember me? Got Davis Michelson with me. Davis, an update to the schedule for today. Madison Wheeler, a student at Buffalo Gap High School, will also be joining us in the conversation that we have with Shirley Kaufman later. Yeah.
So we've got Ms. Kaufman along with one of her students.
Yes.
That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, that's very exciting.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Some of the efforts that are being made to make sure that the students are recognized for their efforts through the course of the year, I think are pretty amazing. And we're going to be talking about some of that. We've talked about the virtual hog shows, cattle shows, all kinds of livestock shows. Well, we'll get an update from Shirley and Madison on what they're doing out there.
We talked to Jennifer Scheich just last week about, you know, her experience showing and her kids and stuff. And boy, it's a different kind of year, and it's really taken some of the air out of out of some of these clubs, the 4-H, the FFA, these shows, the county fairs being canceled. So finding a different kind of way to do that, man, I think these kids and the parents involved would take about anything they can get.
Darn right. Darn right. Yeah. 4-H meant so much to me.
Me too.
Growing up, anything that we can do to support them, we're going to, including, including a benefit concert on August 27th.
Well, tell
Lee
me about
Price,
that.
Justin Moore.
What?
Yeah. It's going to be a benefit concert at the end of the Farm Journal Virtual Field Days. It's coming up. It starts with the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, August 17th. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to the virtual field days, and then we're going to wrap things up with a benefit concert with the proceeds going to 4-H. So, yeah,
Lee Bryce,
it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah.
And Justin Moore. I know that you and Justin Moore had connected previously. You guys are kind of friends a little bit, you know, big stars hanging out together.
Right. Whatever.
Lee Bryce, I mean, how did we get him?
Oh, he's
Do we have compromising photographs or something like that?
No.
Are there photographs?
No, he is a big supporter of agriculture.
Oh, fantastic.
A huge supporter of agriculture.
Perfect.
Yes.
That would be perfect.
So I know that I don't know him, but it would not surprise me a bit if he jumped very quickly to get involved in the effort out there. So you can learn more about it at farmjournalfielddays.com. That's farmjournalfielddays.com. You can sign up for all of this stuff. And the crop tour registration, the Farm Journal Virtual Field Days registration, it's free. All you got to do is sign up. So there you go. FarmJournalFieldDays.com. All right, let's have a conversation now with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, Greg?
Doing well, Chip. How are you?
Doing just dandy. Just dandy after a week of vacation. I'm ready to get back at it and hear about what you're learning, man. So let's start with the pick of the week.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little older combines. I wrote a blog about this one Saturday, Chip. There was a farm estate auction down in east central Texas, just northeast of Austin. Of course, beautiful country down there. But they had a sale, and on the sale Saturday was a 96 model John Deere 9600. This thing only had 600 actual engine hours on it, so kind of a crazy deal. But apparently the owner had bought it new, ran it 3 or 4 years, then just parked it. So anyway, it came up for sale Saturday, brought $48,000, which is the second highest auction price on a 9600 combine in 5.5 years. Now, Deere made that model. Of course, all your listeners probably know from 89 to 97. The only one higher the last 5.5 years, Chip, was on a kind of a famous auction. It was June 18th, 2019. Our friends at the Steffes Group up in Beardsley, Minnesota. An online estate auction, and on that one they had a 90 model 9600 with only 311 engine hours. They sold for 68, and that was the same sale that had a 83 Deere 8820 combine with 15 hours that had never been in the field, only driven home from the dealership. That brought 75.5. And to kind of loop it around, the
what's
guy
that 8820 doing now?
Well, it was bought by a guy in Texas, and actually he took it to the field, posted video of it on Twitter. So I don't know if he also got the 9600 Saturday for 48, but these older combines, a lot of interest when they show up like this with crazy low hours.
Yeah. Well, and there might be a little nostalgia involved in it, but these guys are just looking for a solid machine that's going to perform and do what they need it to do, right?
Well, $48,000, I mean, you just dropped a zero off the price tag there of maybe what you're looking at on a new one. So, hey, it's some people might say it's crazy to pay $48,000 for a, what, 24-year-old combine, but how often do you see one with 600 hours? And it doesn't matter if it's in Texas. That's the thing that got me. It's not Illinois or Minnesota, upper Midwest. This is Texas and still brought $48,000, so pretty strong.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. What else happened down there in Texas?
Well, there were two other items really strong. Again, to me, drove home the point of these days with the internet, it doesn't matter where this stuff sells. If it's right, it's hot. So they had a John Deere 8410T track tractor, just under 3,300 hours on it. One owner, always shedded. And that brought $70,000. Now that's tied for the highest auction price in 11 years on an 8410T. Of course, track tractors have been hot for a couple of years. We've been talking about that. But they also had a sprayer, a John Deere 6500, with just under 3,000 hours on it that brought $27,500. And that is tied for the second highest auction price on a 6500 sprayer in 7 years. So they had quite a sale there Saturday down in Mumford, Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. You know, and it feels like the aversion to paying for new is widespread. It's all over the country. It's not just in the middle of the country. It's not just in Texas. It's everywhere.
It is. Yep. Times are tough. Dollars are tight. Good condition used is at a premium when it shows up, whether private or at auction. There's no shortage of buyers for it.
Right. Exactly. What else you got on older combines? I know that this is a topic that's gotten a lot of interest.
Yeah, I posted a blog last night, Chip. One of my Facebook followers, Joe, forgive me if I mispronounce your last name, Mikinek from out in northeast Nebraska near Lynch, sent me some pictures that just made me smile. He said, Pete, we've had Oliver combines on our farm since 1963. Give me the whole story, the whole history. And he sent me pictures from last week of their pair of Oliver 535s out cutting wheat there in northeast Nebraska. Just awesome pics. I think they had a drone that was getting some overhead shots. So you can check out those pictures. Just, you know, go to machinerypete.com, look for my blog there, folks. But, Chip, 1 minute before I hopped on the call this morning, Joe sent me another picture. The first combine they bought on their farm was an Oliver 430. It was delivered on July 4th, 1963. And he said, Pete, I was going through some 8mm slides and I found a picture of this.
Jeez.
And he sent me the picture. The dealer, Conrad Thorell from Thorell Implement, was delivering this thing. And I'm going to post it. Give me 10 minutes after we hop off the call. I'll post this thing.
Cool.
I'll tag AgriTalk on Twitter. But it is really an awesome picture.
Very cool. There was another hot auction up in Minnesota. What happened there Thursday?
Yeah, last Thursday night, exactly what we were just talking about, Chip. The good condition older stuff is just super hot. So Dennis and Lana Larson, retirement sale in Sherbourne, Minnesota last Thursday by Auctioneer Alley, my friend Kevin and Dan and the boys there, great firm. They had an 05 John Deere 8420, only 2,051 hours on it, sold for $133,000. Same story. Second highest auction price in 5.5 years. Current average is $69,258. But how interesting, Chip, that's the average auction price, $69,258. It's actually gone up the last 2 years, by the way. But the current average dealer ad price is $71,974. So almost the same is the auction price on a 15-year-old tractor. The other tractor they had there was an 09 John Deere 8230, 1,485 hours, went for $135,000. Again, same deal. Tied third highest auction price in 6 years. So when this low-hour stuff over 10 years old, pre-def, pre-tier 4 shows up, you know, it's just getting stronger.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, what do you got planned this week?
Well, a lot of good auctions we're watching this week and getting ready to film two auctions next week for our TV show, one Friday, July 31st in Worthington, Minnesota, dealer reduction auction for our friends at Jaycox Implement. Great dealer there. sales by Wheeler Auctions out of Missouri coming up to do the sale. And Wheeler also has a big sale Saturday the 25th. And then we're filming Saturday, August 1st in Granville, Iowa. My good friends at Vanderwerf and Associates have a farm estate auction with some beautiful equipment on it. So check out their website. It's VW72.com.
VW72.com. All right, Greg, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, sounds good, Chip.
All right, that's Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. We're going to the food tank next.
Radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, I'm going to start with corn. It's under some pressure this morning, but it is off session lows. What's going on there?
Well, a couple things. One, the weather is mostly favorable, so that's putting some fundamental pressure on the market. Two, the wheat market's under heavy pressure this morning with double-digit losses in the winter wheat markets. So that's putting some more pressure on us. What has helped out is the soybean market, which is trading solidly higher this morning, and that's helped to pull corn here off its lows at mid-morning. So, kind of in a nutshell, it's a negative day of price action, but soybeans are trying to save the day for corn, maybe.
All right. Soybeans pushing to the upside because of some export demand?
Yeah, I think so. Because, let's be honest, they have the same weather that corn has. So the weather's generally non-threatening. But we've seen another daily export sale to China this morning, and that is giving us some support, working on 5 days in a row now to the upside. Meal market, it's also higher, and soy oil is higher as well. So the entire soy complex is working to the upside. And that's lending, more support than if you had some spreading action in the product markets.
Exactly. Okay, kind of an ugly start for the livestock.
Yeah, just a rough morning here. It started off pretty quiet, to be honest with you, but seller interest has picked up. So profit-taking in the cattle market. We had the nice upside breakout last week and strong gains there for the week. But pulling back some this morning, and so we'll see where it goes. The cash market's going to have to perform, and then hogs, they're under heavy pressure as well this morning.
Yeah, we got the cold storage and the cattle on feed report coming our way later this week. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Well, the boys around here don't listen to the Beatles run. Old boy Cephas through
it. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got an interesting conversation lined up for you right now. We're going to bring in Danielle Nierenberg. She is a food activist. She's the founder and president of Food Tank. And we've got to start by congratulating Danielle. She is the recipient of the 2020 Julia Child Award. Welcome, Danielle. Congratulations on the award, and thanks for making time. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Excellent. So, Danielle, I think we need to start with the basics here and Food Tank. I assume that's a play on the term think tank, and what is Food Tank all about?
Sure. We're a research and advocacy organization that really looks to highlight stories of hope and success in the food system, both internationally and domestically. So over the course of my career, I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of scientists, farmers, chefs, youth, women, leaders in the food system, the whole range of stakeholders that are working to produce food for the world. And our job is to not tell the bad stories that you often hear about farmers across the world, but to really highlight what they're doing to feed us all.
Well, we need as much of that as we can get. And we need farmers to do it for themselves. But it's wonderful that we've got an organization like Food Tank to go out and tell that story, too. In the interview that you did with the Washington Post, Danny, I saw one of your comments was that we are trying to bring together voices and amplify folks who haven't had their voices heard. Who are you talking about specifically in that comment?
Well, it ranges. For example, I grew up in a town called Defiance, Missouri, and I feel like those farmers I grew up around, my farmers were my parents were not farmers, but I feel like those folks, people in the rural part of the United States, don't often get their voices heard. They're often sort of looked down upon. They're blamed for, you know, environmental problems that result, you know, can result from agriculture. We're talking about Black, Indigenous people of color who have been working in the food system who, you know, don't often get the recognition or respect that they need. And I think we've seen that with the demonstrations and uprisings around inherent racism, not just in the food system, but in our economic system. So really trying to amplify those voices. There's so much great work going on. It just needs more attention. It needs more research. And ultimately, it needs more investment.
Yeah, interesting. So I think you are a self-described food activist. Is that right?
I would describe myself as an advocate and an activist.
Okay.
Activist is something I tried to avoid, but it's something I turned into, apparently.
Well, I think the idea of disruption comes along with the term activist. I don't think you're afraid of disrupting, you know, common thinking, are you?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that needs to happen or we won't solve the problems that we're seeing around whether it's food and agriculture or other problems that we're seeing in sort of our social system.
Yeah. So when we think about the, you know, I'm going to save that for just a second because there's one more term that I've seen in some of the articles that you were interviewed in, and it's equity in food systems. How do you describe that, equity in food systems? It's an interesting term.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen, especially in places like the United States, is there's a lot of disparity. You have, you know, places that are abundant, you know, with places to buy food, whether it's grocery stores or farmers markets, or people have access to community gardens and CSAs. And then you have other parts of the country, you know, underserved, both rural and urban areas, where, you know, folks who are working in the food system, you know, corn and soybean farmers, for example, don't often have access to healthy, nutritious food. And so I think there's a real inequity and inequality that happens when we're looking at how people can access safe, nutritious, delicious, healthy food in this country. It's often very hard for folks. You know, when I was a kid, you had to drive 45 minutes to the grocery store because we lived way, way out in the country. And that's still the same for a lot of people. And again, in both rural and urban areas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the attitude about this is that if you could just provide more sources of groceries, you're going to fix all the problems. But a lot of times, those that are looking to fix the problems are looking to fix problems that in the minds of the consumers don't even exist, right? Don't we need to talk to them first?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, I couldn't agree more. This is something we talk about all the time. Whether you're talking about the global south or we live in the global north, you know, if you go into a community and tell them what they want instead of asking what they need, then you're making a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Development only works when people are part of the process, when it's very democratic and participatory.
Okay. So during the shutdown here, Danny, we've on AgriTalk, we've detailed what we've called, well, not just we've, others have called it as well or described it as vulnerabilities of the supply chain. How might what we've learned about the supply chain change things going forward?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the things that were fragile before the pandemic were just, you know, sort of unveiled, right? We saw, you know, a lot of things around, you know, long supply chains that when the pandemic hit and farmers were forced to dump milk or any of the other things that we saw on the news, that, you know, maybe shorter supply chains would work better. I think what we've been talking to experts about on our own live streams and podcasts is, you know, I don't think there's a way that we can go back to business as usual. There's not going to be a new normal. I think there's going to be a transformation of how we think about how, you know, our food and agriculture systems work, and you know, how workers are treated, how farmers are treated, who wins and who loses. You know, farmers, in especially in North America, have had a rough time over the last few years. And as you know better than me, and the pandemic has only made it worse. Low prices, you know, safety concerns, et cetera. This is a really hard time for farmers. And increasingly, that, you know, the fragility of our mental health systems are being sort of revealed, as well as farmer suicides increase. And, you know, people are literally losing their farms.
Right, right. You know, here's a conundrum that I think we're looking at, Danny, and that is that the drive for efficiency created some of the vulnerabilities that existed in the supply chain. So do we go backwards on the efficiency? And if we do go backwards on the efficiency, what does that do to the sustainability of the industry?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good question. It is one of the questions that we need to figure out. And I don't have a good answer for it. I think striving for efficiency only left us this vulnerable. So we need to find ways to combine efficiency with sustainability. And I don't know if that means scaling back, you know, having more medium-sized farms rather than some of these really huge operations. You know, I think it can mean a lot of things. I think it means, you know, really valuing workers, for example. I think that disrespect, and, you know, I don't think it was meant that, you know, to happen that way, but there's a lot of disrespect to farm and food workers. And if they had been treated better, I don't think we would have seen a lot of the disruptions in the supply chain. If they were paid well, if there was a way to create more space for them to work, if you know, companies, you know, and I hate to call out names, but if companies like Smithfield and Tyson had really taken this seriously at the beginning, then maybe we wouldn't have seen some of those disruptions, and I, you know, things could have been a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have taken some significant measures, as I understand it, to correct that.
Right. It took a bit, though. It took a bit longer than I think it should have.
Okay.
And I think a lot of other folks feel the same way.
Yeah. So looking forward over the next 12 months, just over the next 12 months, how is the food delivery system, and I mean restaurant, grocery, how is it going to change?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to see more and more of it. But at the same time, I think we're going to see so many more restaurants shut down permanently. You know, 85% of independent restaurants will likely go out of business this year. That's really startling to me, because those are not chains, right? These are independently owned businesses. Some of them have, you know, more than one restaurant, but they are not your Applebee's or your, you know, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Yeah. And that's going to put a lot of folks out of business, and not just, you know, food workers and wait staff and cooks. It's going to put a lot of farmers out of business. Farmers were, you know, especially small and medium farmers in the Northeast and the West Coast, and even in Middle America, were supplying a lot of these restaurants. So I think we will see more delivery, because folks are still very concerned with the uptick in cases of COVID-19, that, you know, they're still going to get a lot of delivery, whether it's, you know, takeaway from restaurants or, you know, Instacart purchases. Those things are only going to increase. I hope, in the same way that I hope that, you know, we can transform how food and farm workers are treated, that we can figure out a way to treat restaurant and delivery service workers better too, because they're not getting paid that well. They're really putting their lives on the risk. They're on the front lines. I think there's a lot that needs to happen to gain more respect for them.
Excellent. Excellent. So how are you going to leverage the Julia Child Award into getting your message out there more? I mean, you're getting on AgriTalk. That's one thing.
I know. Thank you again. I mean, we're going to do a couple of things. One is, Food Tank has been very good at convening over the last several years. We're known for our Food Tank Summits, which bring together, you know, food justice advocates on the same stage as corporate, you know, agriculture corporate executives. So we want to continue those. We've been doing those sort of virtually online, but once we're all able to get out and about safely again, we plan to have what we call Food Talk Live events in Chicago, Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., New York, and other cities, where, you know, people can get together and talk about these issues in comprehensive ways. And we also are going to create a Food Justice Fellowship with part of the money, so that we can talk about these issues more broadly and consistently.
Excellent. Danielle, thank you so much for your time this morning. And again, congratulations on the award.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me.
You bet. That is Danielle Nierenberg. She is the founder and president of Food Tank.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. It's good to be back with the mic and all the AgriTalk listeners out there. Thank you so much. Okay, let's have a conversation now with Shirley Kaufman. Shirley is the ag instructor at Buffalo Gap High School. And Shirley, I think I've got this right. Buffalo Gap is in Virginia, right?
Correct. Swope, Virginia.
Swope, Virginia. All right. How are you today, Shirley?
Doing fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. We've also got Madison Wheeler with us. Madison has just wrapped up what was a really weird and unexpected sophomore year at Buffalo Gap. Madison, thank you for joining AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
I'm good.
Good, good, good. So, Madison, question for you here. COVID-19 and all the social distancing and everything, I'm sure that it created a very unexpected year for you presenting your projects for the year. Tell us what you are involved with through the Buffalo Gap FFA.
Well, I, of course, had market animal show projects. I had two lambs, a pig, and a steer, and I've heavily involved in livestock judging, and I really missed out on a lot when COVID hit.
Right. Shirley, what are we doing to make sure that they get the experience that we all want them to have through FFA?
Well, I'm also, in addition to being an FFA advisor, I coach the livestock judging team, 4-H team, and I've coached them from 1990. So what they've missed out on is, we went virtual with our support sale and our show, where we had on the support show, we had 270 some head of livestock shown of the total of 500. And then we did a support sale for the kids. And, because it was done April like 31st and May 1st, we are one of the, it was quick. I mean, we had COVID, we turn around and, we had a short time in our show, and those kids already had their livestock, so we had to do something to help them out. Like Madison, Madison said she had a steer, two lambs, and a pig. When you start looking at her total investment, and I'm guessing, because I have not, I'm guessing just with feed alone, she's in probably $5,600 to $6,000, and so we needed to do something to help these kids out. So we took a virtual way of doing things.
Yeah. Yeah. Madison, was it, and I know that you've been involved in real shows before, but what was the virtual show and virtual sale experience like for you?
Even though I had to, record everything from my own home and wasn't in the show ring, I still thought it was the best we could possibly do with the situation, because we were still able to show them just like we would in the actual show ring, just, not with all the rest exhibitors beside you, but it was still able for me to be able to like present my livestock the way I would any other time. And I thought it was the best possible ability or like thing to do.
What did you learn from putting together those videos, Madison?
Well, it definitely took some trial and error to be able to get them edited where it looked good, and made sure I also had to make sure my parents were able to record good when I showed it. And it took a lot of time, but it was definitely worth it.
Interesting. Shirley, what are you learning from the students that, like Madison, that are going through this?
Well, I'm learning from the students, and we've been allowed here through phase 2 and 3 with 4-H to practice with the kids, and they are missing, they want to get out and learn. You know, I mean, we're a livestock judging, and they want to also go back in terms of FFA because, you know, we had a virtual convention. We're going to have a virtual convention this fall. The kids want to interact. They want to be with their friends. They are passionate about agriculture. And I know when we practiced, and it's only the second time we practiced, the kids are very focused and they're very dedicated. They're just happy to be doing what they love to do.
Yeah, with some of the sports teams coming back into action in the state of Iowa, I just kind of expected that, boy, this is not going to be good because they're not going to respect the social distancing. The kids want the games to go on. They want the season to continue. We want the shows to come back. We want the livestock judging competitions to come back. So what I've noticed is the kids are really doing a pretty good job of respecting the social distancing stuff. Are you seeing that, Shirley?
Oh, yeah, they're doing an excellent job, you know.
Yeah.
If they've got to wear a mask, they don't even complain about it. They want to do, like, the showing and, you know, and they wash their hands and they're mm-hmm. respectful to others, you know, that are vulnerable. And yeah, I totally agree. Agree.
Yeah. Madison, what are you looking forward to the most in your junior year?
Well, I'm hoping it'll be able to get pretty normal again, and I just can't wait to get my projects again for the Market Animal Show and hopefully show them normally again and try my best to get as far up in the class as I can. So.
Right, right, right. So with the virtual shows, did they place anything, Madison, or was it just kind of a critique?
Yes, yeah, so they did placings, they did the champion drive, they did everything that we would do in the actual in-person show, just virtually.
Nice, nice. Shirley, how did the parents receive the virtual side of things?
Well, the virtual, you know, when we started doing it, I reached out, and when we said we're going to have to do a support sale, because with the support sale, the kid took a collage of their animals and pictures, because for us to try and sell over 500 animals on the internet was going to be difficult.
Right.
So what we did that. We had 141 kids participate in it. The community loved it because they could go into that virtual,
sure,
the internet and say, okay, I'm going to give this kid $25 and go down to 10 kids or $100. And they only had to do it one time.
Right.
Now, the virtual show, like I said, I think we had 271 videos. And our extension agents did an amazing job. And then
good.
What we did.
Good. Hey, Shirley, we are out of time. Thank you so much for your time today, Shirley and Madison out at Buffalo Gap.